This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Ben Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the secrets behind Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 14, Norbert, the Norwegian Ridgeback.
Oh, man.
Norbert.
I'm going to get chapter art out of the way first because
I agree. This I wrote right next to it. I was like, 10 out of 10. This chapter art slaps, man.
It does. And honestly, this is... So we talked about this a little bit in the last chapter where it's like it feels like it's the wrong title for the chapter. Like you could have just called it Sorcerer's Stone or Snape's... What do I call it? Snape's Detour.
Yeah.
I remember ending last week's episode and saying, like, yeah, I would just go with Snape's Detour. And then I was like, no, Sorcerer's Stone. That was the right answer. We just had a whole conversation about it. And then I said the wrong name. And so I was like, anyway. So I wanted to backtrack from last week's episode and make that small correction there. But yeah, no, this is like one of those examples of... This chapter is like a side quest.
It is such a side quest chapter. It is such a there needs to be a reason for Harry to end up in the forest to confront Voldemort and talk to Ferenc to tell him that it was Voldemort so that Harry realizes that Quirrell or that Snape is not in it for himself, but actually it's way worse than he thought.
Yes, exactly. There's like a lot of like very work backwardsy kind of writing related things that I think you can observe happening. Like this whole chapter, for example, is almost like clearly the outline of the whole story had been written, and it almost feels like the Norbert chapter was like one big thing that allowed a couple of other things, important vital details, to fall where they needed to fall.
Yes.
So specifically, Malfoy discovering that they're going to be out in the middle of the night.
The absolute... This is what, I kept writing it down in this chapter, like, Malfoy needs to get a life. Like, he is being such a bother in this chapter.
He's a plot device more than a character.
He's such a plot device in this, specifically in this chapter. And then at the same time, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are being, like, more careless than ever. Like, they're so sloppy this chapter.
They are indeed. A little uncharacteristically. There's another little detail that I'm going to point out that also feels rather uncharacteristic of one of our Golden Trio members. So, without any further ado, we can dive in proper to the discussion of Norbert the Norwegian Ridgeback. Which again, so the big thing for me is sort of like coming into this chapter, there's a scene where I think Ron is the one in particular who has been going and spending time with Hagrid, specifically like helping him to feed Norbert, which lands him with a bite to the hand. And the fact that Ron is there of all people, it's like, I feel like in Prisoner of Azkaban, we see like Hermione be extremely involved with with like Buckbeak's trial and stuff like that. This, I'm like, it feels odd that it's Ron in particular, but it's almost like in order to find a way for Malfoy to discover where they're going to be and when, you need a situation that would allow Ron to end up in the hospital wing so that Draco could go and make fun of him, borrow the book, and inside of the book is the information that tells them they're going to be out in the middle of the night, all of which needs to happen so that detention can take place in the Forbidden Forest, where Ferenczi could just give a massive
it is so info much dump. And it's like it's like the amount it's like the amount of like hoops that have to be jumped through for Malfoy to then like it's like he like who even goes up there, he like even it doesn't even make sense. It's like Malfoy lies about needing to borrow a book but then just takes a book anyway. Like, yeah, as right, if, like to he, follow through on the lie, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Like, Ron could just be like, no, I'm not giving you my book.
I'm not giving you a book. And like, why does he, like,
Malfoy's like, no, I'm doing a bit here, okay? Like,
I lied to get in here so I could come bully you, okay? You got to let me take the book.
Do you have a book with it with extremely vital information possibly tucked into the pages?
Like, why would you be keeping it in the book? Why'd you write it down? Even the plan for Charlie, like, Charlie's plan is like, could you meet on top of the tallest tower? It's like, what they needed to write back was, how about you meet us at Hagrid's hut? Like, why add this needless complication? And then, even then, like, it baffles me that Hagrid lets the three first years handle this for him.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Like, he does all of the wrongdoing here. And, like, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are like, dude, you got to get rid of this thing. And he's like, yeah, I guess you're right. I probably do. It is illegal. You guys just want to carry it up to the tower? and it ends up just being Harry and Hermione. And they, in the middle of the night, carrying a dragon,
dragon that is apparently big enough that when it swipes its tail inside of Hagrid's hut, the window shakes.
Yes, this is a house-shaking-sized baby dragon now that the two of them, not even three of them, have to get underneath the invisibility cloak, carry it, as far as I'm concerned, up the hill to the castle, and then up to the tallest tower, completely unnoticed by anybody, like, at all. And it's like, Hagrid, why can't Hagrid just carry it up there?
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah.
Why aren't they like, Hagrid, great news. We've arranged for Charlie to meet you at the top of the tower.
Right, yes.
Look, here's what we'll do. You can borrow the cloak and put it over the crate. How about that? Then you'll just be taken. There's no, like, it's not suspicious for Hagrid to just be in the castle.
He's the keeper of keys.
Keeper of keys. You know, like, I'm here checking on Fluffy. There you go. Lie accomplished.
Yeah,
easy. You know, what are you doing with a monster? Dumbledore asked me to put this with the stone. There's so many ways they get around this. And it's like that Hagrid ends up with the dragon. And then I guess Norbert is also the reason that Quirrell and Voldemort figure out how to get past Fluffy. So that's another big plot element at play here.
Right.
That we don't quite know about yet.
But no, there's one sentence in particular that I found to just be properly absurd. And forgive me because it's on the second to last page of the chapter.
Sure.
It's exactly as you described. So Harry and Hermione by themselves without Ron, who's in the hospital wings for convenient purposes so that Draco can get in trouble, like by themselves are going to have to carry this giant dragon, which otherwise for all intents and purposes, I have to imagine is not happy about being in the crate.
I know.
Is actively going to be blowing fire at them or fighting them.
What kind of fireproof crate do they have here?
I don't know.
Not for nothing, Ron gets bit on the hand when we know for a fact that one of the requirements for being a first year is gloves, dragonhide glove or similar. You absolutely have dragonhide gloves, and if ever there was an occasion to be wearing them,
especially because Hagrid will go on to be the dark arts teacher, the
care of magical creatures
teacher. It's come on, Hagrid, you're like almost a professor here. Like you need to be guiding Ron on, because that's the thing about Hagrid too that I feel like is underdone in this particular chapter. It's like Hagrid actually is good and tender with animals and creatures and beasts and stuff like that. And this is like one of those where it's like, Hagrid, how are you being so blinded by all of this type of stuff that you're making such bad decisions?
Also, Ron's down there. Ron is down there helping Hagrid feed the dragon. It's like, why does he need help? What is Ron doing that Hagrid can't do by himself.
Jay, he's administering the proper blend of brandy and chicken blood.
Okay, this chapter is so absurd. It is the most absurd chapter in the whole book by far.
Jay, I haven't even gotten to my highlighted line here, which is this sentence is the most absurd sentence the most absurd chapter.
Go ahead.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, Harry and Hermione carrying a dragon up to the tallest tower from Hagrid's hut. This is the quote. How they managed to get the crate back up to the castle, they never knew.
Yeah, right. Like, they never knew?
Yeah. The ones who did it never knew how they did it?
They did it, so next.
It's just like, it quite literally is one of these things where it's like, I don't know how to explain how they did it.
The fact is, it's like, there's no way these two 11-year-olds carried a house dragon up to the castle. That's the thing, they carry it too. When they're like, the one signature known spell we know they could do is make stuff float.
Yes. Well, Wingardium Leviosa.
Wingardium Leviosa. Look, everyone, Miss Granger's done it.
It actually, it feels like a level in a video game, quite frankly, which is that you, the character, have the crate covered in the invisibility cloak. So nobody can see what you're moving. So you have to Wingardium Leviosa, the crate, lifted in the air, and then you're walking through the halls of Hogwarts and having to get past like other students and Filch, and like occasionally like the dragon will breathe fire and you have to make sure you're not near anybody during that. Like,
right.
It feels like a game where it's sort of like, okay, set the dragon down for a second, wait for Peeves to pass. Okay, dragon's back up, lifted, continue. Yeah.
I mean, 1000% this level exists in the Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone computer game for Windows 95.
Is this, like, in fact a task? Am I just describing a real thing?
It is a real thing. I'm not sure about the like moving the crate around or anything, but like there is the level where you're under the invisibility cloak and have to avoid like Filch and Peeves and Mrs. Norris and take some roundabout way through the castle and like, you know, do like the spy game, like wait for them to turn around and sneak past. And
sure.
Because even though you're invisible, of course they can see you with lanterns and stuff.
Right.
You know,
well, I'm very much imagining, I played a lot of Breath of the Wild and there's like one ability that you Link have to like pick up objects and sort of like swiggle them around while you're doing the puzzles and stuff like that. So that's very much what I'm picturing is sort of like the weird kind of like video game joystick mechanics that are required to sort of use both joysticks at the same time to sort of navigate the up, down, left, right, moving forward, back, type of positioning and stuff like that. Yeah, I could totally see it. So anyway, from there, we've mostly covered Norbert.
We haven't, like, normally we just sort of like go down the paragraphs and talk about stuff we highlighted. So we can try and do that. I can't promise I'm not going to get sidetracked again. One of the things I found interesting on the first page that they're concerned that like Quirrell is going to crack and give Snape the information he needs to steal the stone. But and so as a result, they start being like extra nice to Quirrell, which I think is so funny. It says, whenever Harry passed Quirrell these days, he gave him an encouraging sort of smile. And Ron had started telling people off for laughing at Quirrell's stutter. And it's like, it's so funny because like they're sort of defending Voldemort without knowing it.
I know. Yeah, it's a little bit hilarious that they've taken the bait, hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. And it goes back to that conversation between Snape and Quirrell in the woods where it's just so like Snape could have just said so many other words that would have made his allegiance any clearer.
Yes.
And instead, it's just so muddled to the point where quite literally they're talking to the actual culprit involved and they walk away thinking he's the victim.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I saw just a fantastic TikTok the other day about like how Sirius Black is the worst communicator ever.
Okay.
Like the TikTok was saying that people complained that Sirius didn't get a fair trial. And whatever. And it's like, it doesn't matter because there's no way that Sirius goes to trial and answers the questions adequately. Like, it's like, were you the Potter's secret keeper? It's like, I may as well have been. You know? It's like, no, just say, no. The answer was no.
No. Right.
Did you kill those people? Lock me up.
I would have died for my friends.
It's like, okay, I heard yes.
But they died. Where do we land on your position?
Yeah. It's like, I may as well have killed them. It's like, could you just say...
Be less cryptic.
Yeah, for one hot second
take a
here.
Deep breath. There's a way we can get you out of this. Yeah. But of course, nobody's coaching Sirius in this
Yeah, there's like no lawyers in the wizarding world and they like desperately need them.
They absolutely do.
Like even the judges, like there's the scene in Order of the Phoenix where like they don't even know like what the rules are. They're like, wait, Can Squib see Dementors? Do we know about this? We'll check that later. We're going to dole out some justice right now.
Right now, yeah. I was like, we'll remember it for next time. We'll be sure about what actually
good thing
happened.
Dumbledore showed up to point out all those loopholes, which is just basically all the loopholes, which are super obvious to everyone reading.
Yeah.
Much less someone, trained in magical law. Anyway, not the point.
We get all of Dumbledore's five names, though, so there's that.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so, they're defending Voldemort there, which is kind of funny because they just don't get it. I think there's a line here that says, you realize they're worried about studying for exams, and Hermione says, you realize we need to pass these exams to get into the second year. And it's like, that is interesting because every description you ever get of Crabbe and Goyle is that they are like about as smart as a bag of socks.
I think you're giving them too much credit.
I know. But they advance not just past first year, but every single year they pass and manage to get to the next year. Like, these exams are either like just way easier than Hermione would ever let you believe. Or Crabbe and Goyle are not given enough credit.
At bare minimum, by the time Half-Blood Prince rolls around, they should be fourth years.
Yes,
You know, it's just like there's no way that they pass their OWLs.
Yeah.
No, I know. This is like one of those things where it's like Crabbe and Goyle are painted as so inexplicably incompetent. Like, even from like Malfoy's perspective, it seems like they are nothing more than just like brute strength.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like they must be a little bit more capable than anybody's ever telling us.
Like, or else all I can imagine is that like the day before the exams, Snape comes into the common room and is like, Crabbe, Goyle, other students who don't know what they're doing, here are literally the answers to the quests. Okay. You're going to have to make a pineapple tap dance. Here's the incantation. Crabbe, do it. Right, good. Just point the wand and say this. Good, that'll pass. That's good.
It jiggled a bit.
You're good. You'll make it to next year.
No, the thing I wanted to bring up, because I feel like I brought this up a couple of times earlier on in the series, but the I actually highlighted the exact same sentence that you just said. So you realize we need to pass these exams to get in the second year. They're very important. I should have started studying a month ago. This, once again, I think is actually this is well done, because this is like the reverberations of how bad life is with the Dursleys, that I feel like over and over again, this idea of like expulsion or failing out or not being able to return to Hogwarts is constantly this like otherwise threat that is like facing Harry.
Right.
And you're like, I can't have Harry go back and live with the Dursleys.
Right.
Like you, the reader, it's like, this is like a multi-book series. Surely he keeps going back to school. But the constant like worry or concern, because it'll even take place literally in Chamber of Secrets as we get into like the next year with like crashing into the Whomping Willow, where it's like, there we go. We're on a one-way ticket.
That's it.
Again.
Harry is, you're right. The threat of expulsion feels like it's always about like 3 inches away from Harry.
Yes. Yeah. It's like he like flirts with the line way, way, way too much. But the reason that you're so concerned for him is because of the life you would have to go back to if you were kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think, like, as far as establishing like life with the Dursleys as being so much worse than anything Harry's facing death at school sometimes, but somehow it still feels like going back and living with them seems worse.
Yes, it kind of, I mean, it's just straight up abusive. What I think is interesting is that apparently one of the things they need to study for the first year exams is what are the 12 uses of dragon's blood.
Yes.
Which seems to me like if you'd been learning about that throughout the year, because probably it wasn't like one day, here's all 12 uses.
Right.
Feels like today we're covering use number one or whatever.
Right.
Anyway.
I follow your logic.
Yeah, you follow my logic. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's the how it goes. It feels like that might have sparked some memory from the chocolate frog card, which also mentions Dumbledore's fantastic discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood.
You're absolutely correct. Yes. Do you have the 12 uses?
Well, so that was what I was wondering. I was like, you know what? They constantly reference that there are 12. And I'm like, I don't think they ever say what they are in the books. And indeed, at best, there is one confirmed use in the books, if not like maybe like one in one quarter.
Okay.
But it almost feels like more of an. I'll go through them. Okay. I looked this up. There are 3 apparent known named uses.
Okay.
But none of them are in the books. 2 of them are like in interviews. One with the author. One with the screenwriter Steve Clove.
Yeah.
And then one with was like God, I can't even remember the last one, but none of them were like official
things. Is
official
one of them
things.
Oven cleaner?
One of them was oven cleaner.
Okay, that's one of yes. the ones I feel like I knew that one.
But which honestly, so it says spot remover, a cure for verruca, and the 12th use was as an oven cleaner, which also seems like spot remover.
It
kind of
does.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like for this to be one of Dumbledore's like chief accolades, it seems like a lot of what it's doing is sort of like cleaning solution.
Cleaning solution. Yeah. Now that said, in Order of the Phoenix, after Hagrid comes back from, or not come, yeah, after he comes back from the Giants, they go to his hut and he's holding up a bloody dragon steak to his face to yeah. help deal with the wounds. So the fact that it is a bloody dragon steak kind of makes it sound like one of the uses of dragon's blood might be to like help with swelling on wounds.
Like a salve?
Yeah, like a salve or something
okay,
like that.
Okay.
So yeah, that's there. That. And then the only other time we actually see it be used to any effectiveness is when Slughorn uses it to disguise the room he's destroyed, as if someone has been horribly bloody murdered.
Yeah, which that's kind of a curious thing too, because it makes you wonder whether or not, and we're jumping way ahead.
Yes,
at this point,
we are.
But it makes you wonder whether or not dragon's blood has similar properties to human blood for some reason.
I know, but I love the idea that one of the 12 uses of dragon's blood is as fake human blood.
Yes,
looks
yes,
like
yes.
other blood.
Looks like other blood, like hard to discern from other kinds of blood.
This is one of the uses.
Right. Right.
Not like, magical use in any way.
Right. Yeah. And then it always does make me feel a little bit bad because I think Slughorn's blood gets a little dusty in the cleanup there.
Oh, yeah,
like,
oh, right.
This is too bad. Man. Got dust
ruined
all in my blood.
Got dusty blood.
Got dusty blood.
Dear. Not so pure blood now, is it?
that's pretty good.
There you go. Thank you.
Feel like there's any like foreshadowing or anything? I mean, the fact that we get dragon's blood of all things, we haven't really heard reference to the 12 uses ever since the Chocolate Frog card, specifically to the tune of this being a very dragon-centric chapter.
I know, you'd think like, oh, well, maybe they can use the blood or something, but...
Maybe it's just to be like, hey, dragons are a thing in this world, as a gentle reminder.
That is sort of the thing. They kind of like point out that there are, in fact, wild dragons in Great Britain, common Welsh greens and Hebridean blacks, aka Hogwarts Castle, former shape.
Yes, this is like one of those things where I refuse to go and read the comments on the video that we made where we suggested that Hogwarts Castle was a previous gigantic Hebridean black hiding in the foothills of Scotland.
Yes.
Because I don't want to see people contesting it, which I feel like they probably are.
We just need like t-shirts or something for this show that, because this is where we came up with that theory. It was on the show.
I know, yeah, on the fly because of the Caput Draconis.
Caput Draconis, head of the dragon, and then the Hogwarts motto. So we just need shirts that just said like Hogwarts was a dragon.
Hogwarts was a dragon.
Yeah, and it's if you know, you know, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
No, that's a good one. I also highlighted, speaking of dragons, all of the various books that Hagrid checks out of the library, which includes Dragon Species of Great Britain and Ireland, From Egg to Inferno, A Dragon Keeper's Guide, which is three different books, but that this is like one of those trivia questions where it's like, which of these books did Hagrid not check out, you know,
right.
during Harry's first year when tending to Norbert? Apparently it's inside of these books where he learns enough information to know that they again require that healthy blend of brandy and chicken blood, which is a kind of
those are the books he did not check out.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
The ones that he didn't check out.
Yeah.
No, let's see here. What is the name of the book he actually ends up getting? Gosh, we just read it.
Doop-a-doop-a-doo. Yeah, it's a little bit later, I think, because they haven't quite gotten there. It's Dragon Breeding for Pleasure and Profit.
For Pleasure and Profit.
Yeah, that's the one he landed on.
Yeah.
For pleasure. And so does that mean that almost sounds like he was planning on selling Norbert?
Unless it was just for fun.
For pleasure and profit.
Well, I mean, he could be excluding the for-profit part. I mean, he ends up giving it away, so
sure.
for freezies.
Mm-hmm. For freezies, I know. Like, come on, dude. At least sell it to these Romanians.
Right. Also, on the note of dragon on dragons, and on the note of dragon breeding in particular, it's, again, Ron, who sort of uncharacteristically has a little dragon factoid to drop on us, because it feels like a Hermione quote that is just like then given to Ron, but it says, "But it's against our laws," said Ron. "Dragon breeding was outlawed by the Warlocks Convention of 1709.
It does seem like later on in the story, he would say maybe something to that effect, but he'd be like, it was outlawed by the Warlocks Convention of 1709 or something or whatever. You know, like he would like have like a little misnomer there at the end. Like, I don't really know the exact date, but like it's known.
It's known. This one actually, I think, kind of stood out to me a little bit too, because as two individuals who would love at some point in time to be involved with writing lore that goes much further back in the Wizarding World, timeline. The thing that stands out to me is that, like, if the Warlocks Convention of 1709 is such common knowledge that Ron is able to drop it in this sort of like secondhand regard, like just sort of like yes, of course, like this thing, like it almost to me reads sort of like, oh, like America gained independence on July 4th, 1776. Like,
yeah,
like it's a quote that like anybody who has lived in the country would know this information. Like,
right.
It's iconic and important enough.
Like what else happened at this Warlock convention?
Well, what else happened, or else how big or important were dragons to wizarding culture prior to 1709?
That's true.
To where this was like a really big deal.
Yeah. So they were probably huge, like castle sized or something.
Like almost castle sized.
Must have been.
Like you literally almost have to wonder if at some point in time, like dragons were like almost like maybe like some people were successfully taming them in some capacity in a similar like vein to like Voldemort attempting to get like the giants or the Acromantula,
right,
you know, on his side.
Well, like, there almost must have been, because like there are these books about it.
True.
Like, according to Ron, you can't tame them, but like there must have been enough success to at least write the books.
I wonder if that is why inside of when Hagrid is talking about it, he specifically says like books are a bit outdated, you know, which of course they would be if he's reading a book about
breeding. If it's been outlawed since 1709. It must be at least that old.
Yeah, like almost 300 years.
Wow.
Like, you know.
It's impressive that it's still around.
It is very impressive that it's still around. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
All right. That's it. That's pretty. I like that headcanon that the book he checks out is 300 years old. Because, otherwise it's like just the very act of printing this book is like promoting illegal activity.
Yeah. Okay. So the exact line says, got this out of the library, dragon breeding for pleasure and profit. It's a bit out of date, of course, but it's all in here. Of course it's out. Well, it's not even that it's any less accurate than it was when it was written. It's just the book is extremely old.
Yeah. Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pear Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Griffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pear Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped, because like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good, and they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening it's already passed, but like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing, and I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can, and it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think, honestly, kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code GRIFFIN.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
But before we get there, though, so we go on down to Hagrid's hut, where it's stifling hot inside. Yep. Mm-hmm. For such a warm day. Hagrid made them tea and offered them stoat sandwiches, which they refused. Did you look up stoat sandwiches?
I looked up what stoats were.
Yeah, they're like a weasel.
They're like little ferrets or something. Yeah.
So it's like apparently these were quite in vogue at some point in time, but they are like some version of like rodent sandwiches is sort of like
right.
Like what?
I mean, that's sort of what I gleaned from it. Anyway,
contextually, you picked up you understood stoat to be.
Yeah, some sort of vermin.
Wow, I'm genuinely impressed. I was like, what is a stoat sandwich?
Well, just because Hagrid almost like famously always serves them bad food.
He does.
And so it's I got stoat sandwiches. The thing is, there is this weird recurring thing in this chapter specifically where where is Hagrid getting all the stoats for these sandwiches?
Right.
But then later in the chapter, it is revealed that what you're supposed to be feeding Norbert is a bucket of brandy mixed with chicken blood every half hour. And then later, when he gets bigger, he is eating rats by the crate. And I'm like, first, the idea is hilarious to me. It's like, where? Because it means that he's feeding him rats by the crate, which means Hagrid has a way of getting many crates of dead rats. Where is he getting the crates of dead rats?
Maybe he's trapping for them out in the Forbidden Forest.
But he'd have to be trapping so many rats.
This is true. I don't know.
The chicken blood, it's not like it, the way it is said is that there's feathers everywhere, which makes it sound like Hagrid is harvesting the chicken blood himself. He's not like purchasing bottled chicken blood ahead of time.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's my interpretation.
Okay,
as well.
Right. Yeah. He's getting
Hagrid's
the chicken blood.
He's almost certainly, taking out some chickens in the process.
I mean, how many chickens? How many chickens are going down for Norbert?
I don't know.
What's funny is that the very next year, Hagrid's also bursting in and he's like, someone's been killing my roosters. And I'm like, wow, you know what? Given your own activity last year, I'm kind of thinking maybe it's you.
Yeah,
No. Or you got another dragon down there, dude.
This it feels like Hagrid. Hagrid, stick with me now. It might be you.
Last year, you murdered no less than 50 chickens to feed to your illegal dragon. Okay, not for nothing. But there's a giant creature said to be roaming the school, and now there's a bunch of dead chickens again. So you were caught last time too.
This is one of those things. So I feel like we were chatting with some other friends recently who are, fans of the series and everything. And I was expressing my own personal love for Hagrid. And I felt like there were a lot of people that almost sort of were like, are you sure you like Hagrid? And I was like, of course I like Hagrid. He's like the best. He's so great.
Yeah.
And I feel like as I was reading this chapter, I was like, okay, so Hagrid has his faults. there are occasionally some moments.
There's some moments. Well, what they're doing down at Hagrid's hut to begin with, they're not actually there for the dragon egg. He's just asked them to come talk to him about the Sorcerer's Stone down there instead of in the library.
True.
And Hermione, the 11-year-old whiz kid over here, just wheedles information out of him basically right away. At the end of this page, it says, not a soul knows except me and Dumbledore, said Hagrid proudly. And Harry says, well, that's something. you know, like he's like, I guess that's good enough. Like Hagrid would never tell anyone else something that he wasn't supposed to, as if he didn't just reveal all sorts of information to the three of them at like the simplest prodding by Hermione ever.
Yes. Yeah. Like, you know? I mean, Hermione. Yeah. Says Hermione in a warm, flattering voice. Like, yeah. So it is kind of interesting that like Hagrid must be so infrequently on the receiving end of such glowing admiration.
Sure.
You know, that he's sort of like, he can't quite help but just sort of eat up the moment.
I guess I'll tell you who's guarding the stone.
Once again, when it kind of comes back to Dumbledore's big plan, there's always that sentiment that, like, you know, Dumbledore, of course, trusts Hagrid above all else. And this is one of those things where it's like, this might be one of those situations where Dumbledore just knows Hagrid so through and through that he trusts that Hagrid will mess up in the exact way that he wants him to. so that Harry will learn what he needs to know
right.
about how to
I trust Hagrid will mess up.
yes that's what I mean by I trust Hagrid. It's like, yeah. I know exactly what Hagrid is always going to do,
right.
always,
right.
And it works out well in my favor.
I will. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say before we get to the line that you just mentioned there, though, we do get a line because we talked about this a little bit in last week's episode about whether or not Snape might know all of the other obstacles.
Yes, that's exactly what I was gonna say.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so Hagrid says, number one, I don't know myself. Number two, you know too much already. I wouldn't tell you if I could. The stone's here for a reason. It was almost stolen out of Gringotts. So that sort of suggests to me, because Hagrid is also one of the professors. Well, I guess he's not a professor.
Not a professor, yeah.
He's one of staff who was involved with protecting the stone. And
right.
He doesn't know what the other teachers did.
Right.
So I think it does stand to reason that the conversation that Snape was having with Quirrell, that the information it seems like he's trying to get out, that kind of like hocus pocus line, is some version of like, how do I get past your
exactly
challenge? Yeah.
Yes. I also, his next sentence is, beats me how you even know about Fluffy. And I'm like, well, that part's pretty easy. What do you mean? How do you know? We opened the wrong door.
It's like, how else do you guess? Yeah. Three-headed dog.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Anyway. Okay. So the bucket of brandy thing I thought was kind of interesting, because the other thing that comes up eventually is that when Madame Maxime arrives in Goblet of Fire, does she have a Braxen? Is that what pulls her carriage?
I want to say it is a Braxen, yeah.
Okay, well, what is it? Man, now my brain is like, I feel like it's reaching for some other name and I can't remember what it is.
Large winged horses,
indeed. And they only drink single malt whiskey,
yes,
I believe.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is sort of curious that this is the second occasion where a magical beast requires alcohol as
yeah.
part of its sustenance, which I was like, I wonder if that's more common across the board. And it's like I want to know if like inside of other mythology outside of even like just the Harry Potter lore itself, if this might be a thing that might possibly be believed, that like part of like what makes these beasts so dangerous is that they drink alcohol or something.
Oh, right.
Like
yeah. You know? Like they need alcohol, but of course they're drinking tons of it. So they're just sort of like a little wild.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe that's supposed to contribute to the, like the lack of predictability of what these things are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not totally sure though, but I did, that stood out to me. I literally underlined bucket of brandy and just wrote,
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that. This is like a brand new, and also like you're supposed to feed them that, but like in the wild, how would like mother dragons be providing that to their young?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, it must assume in some capacity that whatever or however mother dragons feed their baby dragons, the solution is, like from a nutritional standpoint, similar to these ingredients.
Got it. Dragon's milk is alcoholic. Got it.
Yeah. You read between the lines.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You nailed it. Anyway, so as we turn the next page, though, there's another little interesting tidbit, which is that Hagrid has basically gone from hiding the dragon from anybody to actively sending Harry a note that says it's hatching.
Yeah.
So he's sort of like, well, as long as you know, I'd love for you to be a part of this special day.
Get down there.
Go and be involved.
Of course, naturally, as they're talking about going down there, Malfoy's only a few feet away and it's stopped dead to listen because he has nothing better to do.
Come on.
Ever. Malfoy. I literally just wrote, dude. I can do, come, man, go do something else. You got to get like a hobby or something. Then there's this like, they talk about how they're going to go see it, and they're arguing about whether or not they're going to go see it. And eventually they agree that they'll go down to Hagrid's during morning break. And it's like, it's such an obvious solution. I'm not sure why they ever had to argue about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like the big question is, it's like, well, are we going to go now and miss class, or could we go immediately after during morning break?
Yeah.
It's like... Morning break should be fine.
It sounds good. Come on, guys.
They make it in time. I do love the description of a freshly hatched Norwegian Ridgeback.
Like a crumpled black umbrella?
A crumpled black umbrella. It's like, I don't know why, but I'm like, I can see that.
Because I guess the wings are so spiny, but I like that the word umbrella is used, because that's also like Hagrid's wand.
That's true.
It's like Hagrid's dragon. It kind of feels like, yeah, that works. That kind of makes his wand a little more dragony.
How would you describe Hagrid? He's kind of like umbrella-ish.
Yeah, you know.
You know umbrellas? He's like
Hagrid.
That's Hagrid.
Yeah.
They're one and the same. Yep. And then when the little baby Norbert sneezes, a couple of sparks flew out of its snout. So it's a little bit adorable at first, which Hagrid immediately picks up on and says, "Isn't he beautiful?"
Oh. I love how it is eventually revealed that Norbert is a female dragon, and that Hagrid has this book and doesn't like immediately like check whether it's male or female.
It's another one of those moments where it's like, you want to be giving Hagrid the benefit of the doubt, like that he knows what he's talking about when it comes to magical beasts. And it feels like it's kind of like a touch and go type of thing. Like sometimes it seems like he's like dead on the mark and he knows like a ton of information.
Yeah.
And then others, it's sort of like, Hagrid, how do you miss that?
Yeah.
You know, that one feels like it should be within your range.
Yeah.
Although, I guess, to be fair, nobody's supposed to have bred one for 300 years.
I guess so.
There's that.
Naturally, not seconds after the dragon has been hatched, they notice that Malfoy had seen the dragon through the window because, again, he has nothing better to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's just convenient that he didn't have class during morning break, and he's like, you know, I'm going to spend my morning break. I'm going to head down to Hagrid's to see whether or not that Potter kid's down there doing something for something, something, something.
How many things throughout the year did Malfoy go and eavesdrop where nothing interesting was said?
I know, exactly. Like, when we get this, like, supposed Harry Potter TV show that's coming out where they're just redoing the books, but as a TV show, there needs to be like just a subplot where Malfoy is just like hiding behind stuff all the time.
Yes.
You guys talking about something?
Like his overall objective, like if you get to follow just Draco's character, independent from everybody, it almost needs to be the case that for some reason Draco has extreme motivation to be like, riding their tail always.
Yeah.
You know, so he's just, it's almost just sort of like, hey, are you going to potions? It's like, nah, Potter's going to be in Defense Against the Dark Arts, so I'll probably just stand at the door and listen.
Exactly. Like, I gotta, you know, I'm always eavesdropping, always collecting information. You never know when something's going to come in handy.
Right. And yeah. It's certainly not going to happen in class.
Handy for what, Draco? No
matter what. Yeah. Right. What are you trying to accomplish
what are you
here?
Doing?
Yeah. Anyway, that's all right. But so,
also, then, not only does Malfoy see it, he does not do anything about it. Like, there's this like, oh, like he's got him, you know, he's got him,
right?
There he's got the information. Like, he does nothing with it. He doesn't even tell Lucius about it, you know.
Yep. No, yeah. I know. And that was literally like rereading this, it was sort of like I'm like literally forgetting about the whole scene in the hospital wing where Draco goes up to like taunt, you know, Ron. And ends up getting his book with all the necessary vital bits to figure out how to, you know, go and find them in the middle of the night, which again, earlier in this exact same book, there is the midnight duel. Like he was supposed to confront them in the middle of the night once already and didn't. And
right.
this time he's apparently all about it. He's like, I'm not missing my chance again.
Exactly. Yeah. This time I'm actually going to go, like, instead of tipping someone off that they're going to be there, like he did last time, he's like, I need to personally oversee. But like, what's he going to do? Like, just be out there and catch them. But then he'll also be out of bed, which is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, he'd be better off just tipping someone off.
Doing the exact same play.
Just try the same plan.
Which on some level feels like maybe, because McGonagall is the one who catches him.
Right.
You know, so it does.
One of the rare times she's just out of bed.
In the middle of the night.
Patrolling the corridors.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Which must be a duty. It has to be a duty.
Yeah. Like, it must just, like, you're weak.
Yeah. to be out there making sure that everybody's being up to the right amount of good. Let's see here. So then you start to run into the issue of what do we do? And once again, we get a lot more Charlie than we tend to get for the rest of the series, where Ron basically comes up with the idea like, you know, hey, maybe Charlie can take this dragon. Like, how hard could that be? And I do feel like Hagrid agreeing to this feels slightly out of character for Hagrid. Like, he's almost immediately like, okay, if we have to, you know? And it's like, I don't know why. I mean, it seems like maybe he could have just, like, you know, fought back a little bit harder or whatever. So then they end up, you know, writing Charlie a letter where they get back. And I actually really like the letter from Charlie. It feels just so, like, cordial and maybe slightly out of character amongst the rest of, like, the Weasley brothers.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, dear Ron, how are you? Thanks for the letter. I'd be glad to take the Norwegian Bridge back. Yeah, like, let me help you present a plan. Write back to me as soon as possible. Love, Charlie.
Right.
Like, and I was like,
what a good brother.
I was like, wow, Charlie seems like a good dude.
I know, because they're, like, pretty far apart, like, age-wise. So this must, it's just, like, very much like getting it from your much younger brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
oh, I'll help you out of a jam, little bro.
I can do that.
Look at this, guys. Yeah, I agree. Like, his request, I do, it does, like, also so much of it, like, just relies on trust. Because, like, Charlie's basically going to have to start, like, arranging this before he even gets the send back. It seems like, you know, it's like, can you get them up to the tallest tower at midnight on Saturday? And it's like, okay, I guess we'll send the letter back and just hope that you get it and see you there.
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, it definitely seems like, it always reminds me of, like, pre-cell phone days. So it's, yeah. Which, I mean, I remember, like, we lived in that era. Like, we didn't grow up, like, as, like, little kids with our parents having cell phones or anything.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, at least. And so, I mean, it is, like, a different kind of communication if you were to even go back to, like, pre-telephones, where you couldn't even be like, hey, okay, meet at six. Okay, good. See you then. Like,
yeah.
This is like placing a letter in the mail, sending it to them. They receive it like about a week later, where they respond and agree to meet you at 6 o'clock on like the 21st.
Right.
It's like there's such little follow up. Like, I feel like before I leave my house to go meet somebody for dinner plans at 6, I'll usually send them a text at like 5:15 and be like, hey, we still on for 6? Like,
I feel like, yeah. And it's like one of those things where it's like, does the fact that we are able to communicate so much more directly all of the time mean that you should follow up so much more? Like, because the opportunity, like, you're right. Like, if I said, okay, we're going to meet at 6 on Saturday, and then we just left work, and, like, that was the next time we were going to see each other and weren't going to communicate, like, if you had no way to get in touch with me, you just have to show up.
You would just have to show up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your commitment to being there,
yeah,
seems much more.
Is much, like, greater. Yes, whereas, like, yes, you can commit to 6 o'clock on Saturday now and just know that, like, you know, if something comes up, though, I'll just, like, cancel, because I can just text them, like, as late as, like, 15 minutes ahead of time.
Yeah. To be like, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it. It's like, oh, like, okay, thanks for letting me know.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, yeah, like, that would seem perfectly adequate, but you're right. Yeah. So they have to really rely on a lot of trust. I was reading it, I'm like, It is, like, such a missed opportunity to just meet Charlie in this chapter.
True.
Like, you know, he sends the letter back, but, like, he isn't coming, just as friends are. It's like, why the decision not to have Charlie be there? You know?
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that.
I know.
It's just right. Like, it does feel like, it also just doesn't seem like it needs to be on the tallest tower.
Like, yeah. It's like, actually, we're just going to keep it at Hagrid's hut. He's really big. You know about dragons, right? You study them.
Do you think, is there anything even that we would need to question about the fact that, like, Charlie's friends are just simply able to fly right up to Hogwarts?
Oh, I thought about that. So I was thinking about in Prisoner of Azkaban, where it's like, oh, yeah, getting to Hogwarts, very difficult.
Yes.
But, like, in that case, they do have the Dementor. So I don't think you could just fly up during year 3 or something.
Without the Dementors basically sensing and then in pursuit.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, even in this book, like, Voldemort has just entered the castle just by walking in, basically.
No, I know. It's basically like everything Draco goes through in Half-Blood Prince in order to be able to, like, gain access. It's like, it just doesn't seem like it would have been that difficult.
Well, by the time we get to Half-Blood Prince, though, like, Voldemort is known to be back, so security is a lot higher.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Okay. Yeah, that was one of the things where I was like, could you just fly? And then I was like, I don't really see what would stop you from simply flying right up to it.
Yeah, but like, so Half-Blood Prince, again, when Harry and Dumbledore are going up to see the Dark Mark, like, Dumbledore is, like, murmuring a bunch of spells and, like, undoing a bunch of protective enchantments around the castle so that they can fly so to it.
That's a good point. Yeah. So it must be the case that those enchantments are new by the time Half-Blood Prince rolls them out. So maybe security is a little bit, like, more relaxed, given the fact that it's been a decade since Voldemort's fallen.
Yeah.
There's just not quite the same level.
Right.
Okay. I can live with that.
Okay.
That's not a problem. But yeah, so then I think pretty much from there, we've got, let's see.
Yeah, this is where Ron goes down and gets his hand bitten because he's not wearing gloves.
Yep.
Helping Hagrid feed Norbert crates of rats, I guess, so that he can get sent to the hospital wing so that Malfoy and Co. can come, like, just laugh at him, basically. Again, it's like, I'm just imagining Draco in the common room being like, I'm going to the hospital wing. I'm going to go have a laugh at Weasley. You want to come? Like,
right.
No, Draco, we don't. We're trying to make Pineapple's tap dance. We're not going to make it a second year.
I bet yours is just doing ballet at this point.
I know. Yeah, come on.
You're just so far ahead that you have time to do this. The big question here, though, is sort of like, does Madame Pomfrey, like, I almost wonder if she just excludes herself from the politics of the school hard stop. Like,
yeah.
Her goal, her objective is to look after the students regardless of what happens, regardless of what shows up. It's a magical school. Calamities can happen. I'm not here to ask questions about why. Because we know that, like, Harry, Ron, and Hermione in the next book are illegally brewing Polyjuice Potion, and that
right.
It seems like Hermione is able to go and be treated by Madame Pomfrey. And, like, it doesn't seem like that ends up coming up as, like, a big issue.
Like she assured, I was like, what happened to you? Turned into a cat. Yep. Come with me.
We'll solve it. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure that
so,
out.
So, you know, like in this instance, I think Ron lies and says that a dog bit his hand, but he doesn't think that Madame Pomfrey believes him. Which, you know, what we come to know about Madame Pomfrey, almost certainly she knows that this is no...
Yeah, not like a dog bite.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, I bet from her point of view, it's like, clearly something you don't want to tell me happened to your hand. That's fine. The important thing is we need to heal it, because whatever you did, I still don't want you to die.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so we need to treat it. We'll just leave it there. Because at that point in time, it's like, you know, like, Madame Pomfrey could just be the reason that they get in trouble. Like, we don't need to have necessarily the next passage delving into
right.
like them actually being caught red-handed.
It does seem like, like they wonder whether or not she can recognize a dragon's bite. And I almost have to think she can't, because it does seem like dragon would cross the line of,
like,
yeah, we need to tell Dumbledore about this.
Unless she does go and tell Dumbledore. And once again, I mean,
oh, true.
You know, like, Dumbledore just knows everything that goes on within the school.
He's so, like, it's just, oh, like, oh, I know.
It's like, yeah, who do you think gave the idea for Quirrell to go and bet the egg?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was me.
It was me.
Now, Quirrell, just light conversation here over breakfast and crumpets. You don't by chance have any, like, dangerous magical beast artifacts lying around, do you? Because if
you
not,
yeah.
I might have an egg that I could loan you. If you're feeling like going gambling
and
tonight.
if you ask me, I bet Hagrid would tell you almost anything to get this dragon's egg.
Yes, this seems like classic Dumbledore.
Classic
behavior.
Dumbledore. Yeah.
Got to make sure Harry gets there eventually somehow, right?
Yeah. I want to say there's, like, actually maybe, like, a neat connection here, because we know that Quirrell is good with trolls. Like, that is his bit of hocus pocus, and he's the one who let the troll in.
Right.
And I want to say that in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, like, the guidebook, when you get to the section on trolls, like, there is, like, the mountain trolls are, like, from Norway or something. So, like, it stands to reason that, like that's why he has a Norwegian ridgeback, is because that's where the trolls are, too.
That is sort of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Like, maybe he spent a lot of time in that part of the world and
right.
Like, encountered... these, I like that.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, that's pretty cool. That's a good one.
That is super
yeah.
cool. That is super cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, we're sort of at the end of the chapter, though. So they somehow, they don't even know how, managed to get the crate to the tallest tower
somehow.
In the middle of the night.
No but, help from Hagrid, who's totally willing to let them take the fall for this.
Right. Upon arrival, we get to witness Malfoy getting detention, which feels a little bit like karmic justice, where you're just sort of like, thank goodness that, like, he finally gets in trouble mm-hmm. for something
yeah.
Somewhere along the way. away, and you're like, okay, how about this? I mean, they have the invisibility cloak. They're all good. They're able to successfully pass off Norbert. Norbert's like going, gone. We're all good. And then Hermione and Harry go down the stairs without the invisibility
cloak.
Without
the cloak? Like, are you kidding me, guys?
The number of times that Harry ends up parting with just, like, his necessary artifacts, like the cloak, the Marauder's map, whatever, it's like,
dude.
No.
Take better care of your stuff.
No, gotta keep an eye on it. It's like, you have had one, like, extremely valuable possession your whole life, and you just left it.
I'm also thinking about how this ultimately goes down, because what's going to happen is that McGonagall's going to catch them and give them... Well, Filch catches them, I guess. He's going to bring them to McGonagall, who's going to give them detention. And it just 1,000% seems like they're like Hagrid could just say, like, actually, I had a dragon. They were helping me get rid of it. Instead, what happens is Hagrid is like, yep, I guess you got detention, and I'll be the one carrying it out.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Remember when I got a dragon and you got in trouble? Great. Now I will be punishing you personally.
Right. Yeah. We're going to go into a very dark and dangerous forest that includes the Dark Lord that gave you the scar and killed your parents. Sound good.
He's like, I've never known anything to kill a unicorn ever. They're way too fast. It must be insanely dangerous. Let's go.
No big deal. So anyway, that was chapter 14 for you,
chapter
folks.
Chapter 14. It's a wild ride.
It's kind of hilarious. It's one of those, I mean, it's left out of the film. You know, Norbert obviously is in there a little bit, but we don't get the entire, like, exchange and the return to, you know, to Charlie and stuff like that, which I think on the whole just sort of is easy enough to live without. I mean, it's a fun saga, and it's cool to, like, get more of, like, the relationship and the way that, like, the Golden Trio interacts with Hagrid mm-hmm. and, you know, the rest of that type of thing. But it definitely feels like a lot, you know, from, like, an outlining the story standpoint. I can't help but feel like this whole chapter is here for the purposes of getting them the detention so that they end up in the Forbidden Forest.
Basically.
To get more information.
Yeah.
Because we are closing in.
We're closing in.
On the end of the story.
We've got three chapters left.
I know. I can't believe it. So next week we're going to be diving into chapter 15, The Forbidden Forest.
Yeah.
Which should be just another hootin' and hollerin' good time as per always. JD, mm-hmm. have a review for us.
I think I could rustle up a review for us here.
Let's take ourselves a little quick peek-ski.
All right. This is from, man, I don't know why the reviews on Apple always just, like, fudge up whatever the person's name is, but it's from UJBHHJN.
Wow. What's your username?
I know. Great one. It just says, hey, brother, love your podcast. It is amazing. I listen to it every day. I love the way you deep dive the story. I have a great theory idea. What if Draco was in Gryffindor? I know it's not very likely, but it is an interesting scenario.
Ooh.
So there you go. What do you think? What if Draco was in Gryffindor? Is he, like, nicer? Is he friends with Harry?
Okay, so I feel like, I mean, it seems to me like the thing you would need almost right off the bat is for Draco to sort of take on a rather Sirius Black sort of, like, perspective.
Yeah, like, demeanor. Like, he almost means he's, like, anti his parents or something.
It feels like he'd be anti his parents. We know from, like, the deep dives on Pottermore and the archives and stuff like that, that Malfoy has been told, or Draco Malfoy for that matter, has been told for most of his life that Harry could be the second coming of the Dark Lord, and that this could be somebody that
that's true
we could rally behind. So I could see a world where Draco basically, like, calls an audible up on site, where he discovers, like, Harry's not going to go for Slytherin. It's like, I'm gonna, like, if I'm gonna be able to, like, get this guy on our side,
yeah,
like, I'm gonna need to go into Gryffindor.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, and so basically I could almost see it being a situation where, like, Draco then goes on to be the sort of, like, counterproductive member of Harry's own house. Maybe, and, like,
you, like, in a Peter Pettigrew-esque type role?
Maybe in a Peter Pettigrew-esque role, but, like, I mean, Draco's more competent than Peter.
As all things
being equal. I could see a world where, like, maybe the first half of the series, what you're getting is a man on the inside who's trying to, like, kind of foil Harry's plans, or maybe, like, throughout the series, like, we don't know how they keep getting caught or something, and then you come to discover that it's been Draco, like, pulling the curtain out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, like, he's the informant, but nobody's expecting somebody from their own dormitory.
Right.
But that would make him extremely privy to as much information as he clearly wants.
Right. I think, yeah, I suspect that early on he still tries to, like, upend Harry's success, but, like, being exposed to them so frequently and so often and like being united under the banner of Gryffindor, he like, I can imagine a scenario where like they get in detention in the woods here and it's like Harry still helps him out of a jam.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wait, he actually still helped me even though I've been working against him this whole time. Is that, wait, what just happened?
Right. Yeah. So I like the idea that the reason that Draco goes into Gryffindor in the first place is specifically like, because he's attempting to get something out of Harry.
That's
like,
just
like,
still the most Slytherin move ever, though.
It is. No, and it of course is. Yeah, I mean, it's extremely nefarious. But it's, I like the idea that what this would do is almost like provide somebody who could be like counter to the Golden Trio's objectives from inside of their own camp. But then with time and exposure, Draco ultimately slowly works his way around and maybe by the end of like Goblet starts to actually like be more of like an ally.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, imagine if Harry gets chosen as champion while Draco's in Gryffindor. Is he still like Cedric Diggory, the real champion, you know?
Right. Like the rest of the Gryffindors are going to shove him in a locker.
Excuse me. Shove him in a locker. I never imagined lockers at Hogwarts.
No, they're not.
They just find one. Yeah.
Fred and George just like summon one so they can stuff him in it.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez, man.
No, but that would be, that's my personal thoughts.
Oh, would
that's
he be on the Quidditch team?
Oh.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he probably would.
I think he still is.
I think Draco actually is quite good at Quidditch.
I think you're right. I think he's the, I mean, he's the seeker for Slytherin because he's like, he has to be seeker because Harry's the seeker. But like, I think he could probably play any, he'd probably just be Chaser is my guess.
Yeah, very like a Ginny-esque kind of character that can sort of do it all.
Yeah, sort of do it all. Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah, just out there. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, but not till second year. I still think Harry
not
until
second year, and I have to imagine that. I have to imagine Lucius is like, okay, the whole point of doing this is so that Draco gets to be as special as Harry. So instead of buying the entire team, he probably just gives Draco the Nimbus 2001.
I thought you were gonna say gives everybody the 2001 except for Harry.
Yeah, no, not gonna do that either. So it's that's two on the nose.
Even Oliver Wood would have to be kind of like, this is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I know. Well, how does Oliver handle that? Like, well.
No, Oliver takes every advantage he can get.
Yeah,
when it comes to Quidditch, 100%. Right, yeah. Yeah, no, if he's given the Nimbus 2001s, he's using them for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, he can be bought.
Right, he can be bought. He has a price. I like it. Oh, man. Anyway, guys, as ever, like we said, super excited for next week's Chapter 15, The Forbidden Forest.
Yes, join us next time through the Gryffindor.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.